This show is for educational purposes only and is not personalized advice. Consult your tax advisor before taking action. All investments involve risk of loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Read show notes for full disclosure.
Welcome to the Physician Family Financial Advisors podcast, where physician moms and dads like you can turn today's worries about taxes and investing into all the money you need for retirement and college.
Hello, physician moms and dads. I'm Nate Reneke, certified financial planner and primary advisor here at Physician Family Financial Advisors.
And I am Ben Utley with the Less Sing Song Boys, certified financial planner and service team leader. Today, we're going to continue our series of answering listener and client questions. We ran out of time last time to hit our entire list, so we're just going to pick up where we left off. So, Nate, what's our first question for today?
Yeah, so this is a question about student loans. They asked, is it finally time to pay off my student loans?
Oh, man. We've seen so many times when it looked like it was like the last time. Yeah. It's like watching a horror show, and at the end, the villain just keeps coming back.
Exactly. Yep. So this question, the details of this, they kind of sprawl out. So I'm going to lay out my answer for this. There's a few things you need to consider when you're deciding to pay off debt. This is mortgage, student loans, whatever it may be. Student loans, the interest rate is officially turned back on. So people are paying interest on their student loans. But the hard part is, and the reason they're asking this question, is the savings accounts rates, like cash reserve accounts, are paying really great interest rates. And they're sort of still wanting to hold out if they can, or they're asking if they should. Mm. And so the reality is that since interest rates are turned back on, eventually you have to pay things off, assuming you're not going for forgiveness. You should probably start paying back your student loans and getting them out of your life as quickly as you can while living semi-comfortable life. That's usually seven years is where people land. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, let's say you had a student loans that were 5% interest. Usually they're 6, but let's say they're 5, and your cash reserves is paying 5% interest. So you just want to make minimum payments, because what's the point? What you're missing out of that calculation is the taxes on your cash reserves. So if for a physician who pays a ton in taxes, you get a 5% savings rate on your cash reserves account, the after-tax return on that is 3%.
Right.
Right. So yes, it's time to start paying back those student loans and getting them out of your life.
Right. No tax deduction for the hardworking physicians that are shouldering that student loan debt.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next question is, I make $700,000 per year. This is an anesthesiologist, mm-hmm. but I want my spouse to work. Am I wrong?
This reminds me of that section on Reddit, which is AITA, and I'll let you guess what A stands for. do you want me to take this one?
Yeah.
So I think wrong is a moral interpretation. You know, it kind of mm-hmm. depends on what you want. You know, I mean, and it probably depends more on what your spouse wants. You know, mm-hmm. Is it because you believe that you need more money? You know, maybe recheck those values. Is it because they want to have some meaning and purpose? Is it because their daddy brain or their mommy brain overwhelms them and they need something to kind of feel like they're checked into the adult world? Are they looking for a sense of connection? Are they looking for, you know, a social outlet? It kind of depends on what kind of work it's going to be, right? I mean, there's a difference between sitting in front of a computer blogging and, you know, being a caregiver in some kind of setting, maybe an educational setting. So mm-hmm. I think that the nature of the work matters. And I think that the, not so much the compensation, but really the why behind it, right? So, mm-hmm. and I look at this also and I think, well, how much does it pay? But by the same token, you know, you take vacations where not only are you not getting paid, but you're paying to be there. You're paying to be there to have some joy and to build memories with your family. So I could see a situation where that spouse might work for a very low compensation, and that's something that brings meaning and purpose to their lives. So I don't know that they're wrong for wanting them to work. It just kind of depends on their motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm going to piggyback on that a little bit, and I'm going to get really real here. Okay. You ready? Okay. So I have seen many times where the working spouse feels like the non-working spouse kind of sits around and spends a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
Like they don't go to work, they just spend money. And the reality is that when you're at home with your children, things you end up spending some money for those experiences.
Right.
And a lot of times what it takes is for both of you to sit down and discuss that reality.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, at least from what I've seen, to get a good head on your shoulders about this, you need a third party to sit down and talk to you about it. So I don't know how I found myself in that situation, but that's a situation I'm in often where I'm talking to both of them at the same time. We get all our feelings out on the table, and it turns out money is the scapegoat.
Right.
Well, we could be making, she or he is highly trained. They could be making $150,000 a year, when the reality is after taxes and after nanny bills, it's squashed down to almost nothing. And so it really isn't about the money. It's about wanting to feel really great about choosing to have mom or dad stay home. And if you make that choice, the money is well worth it. But you have to sit down and have a conversation that is not surrounded around money and your goals for raising children in order to feel good about one of you staying home.
As one husband-wife couple said when they're in my office back when I had an office, one said, "Why work really hard to make that money?" And the other said, "Why work really hard to spend it?" And I thought, wow, you know, that's, I mean, somebody's got to spend the money, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's necessary things and there's other things. But still, I mean, it is work to spend that money. It's work to get out there and shop. It's, you know, it's work to look for a deal or search for value or to make those decisions about what's right for the family. Somebody's got to do that. So, you know, to say that the only honorable work is the work of getting money, it's just not true. You know,
it's not.
Everyone has a way to contribute in the family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next question is, my child is 15. Should I put money in my 529s or should I leave it in cash since college is so close?
Oh, can I take this one?
Yes.
Yeah. So I've done this.
Mm-hmm.
I have two kids in college and I stopped investing, probably about 5 years ago when I hit my goal. Okay. And when I say stopped investing, I had all the money saved that I needed because I've been saving since they were born, right? Doing the responsible thing. But I stopped taking risk. So I moved the money to the sidelines because I was like, hey, I've crossed the finish line. It's okay to stop running. And I still think that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, you know, I do have some regrets over that because I have missed out on some returns. And mm-hmm. Taking the other side of that, you know, an investor only has two emotions, greed and fear. That's the greed talking. But the fear mm-hmm. side of me was super happy back when COVID happened and everything went in the tank. I was like, nice. Mm-hmm. Everything's sitting in the money market fund. So all I can say is if you do decide to move your money to the sidelines or stop investing, then you need to be prepared to face that and potentially have some regrets because these markets are going to keep moving. You know, mm-hmm. if you're, what did you say, 5 years out? Yeah, you
three years out.
Okay. So 3 years plus 4 years, maybe you're, you know, maybe you have a couple kids. Mm-hmm. You could be not invested for 7+ years. That's a long time to, you know, be getting a cash return, especially mm-hmm. when cash and inflation rates are about the same neck and neck. So, and then, you know, worse is if your children don't go, then you've really mm-hmm. missed out on a lot. So, if I had it to do over again, honestly, I would just work the glide path on those years to college investments and I'd leave mm-hmm. it alone right up through, you know, having written the last check.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. The glide paths is important. It gets a little bit into the investment weeds, but the reality is those glide paths are tailor made to stop taking so much risk at about that time.
They are. And, you know, they're designed to make it so you don't have to think. And, mm-hmm. you know, like all well-designed things, I had a way of messing it up myself by overthinking it. Mm-hmm. And, I would just say for our listeners, you know, the right thing to do in most circumstances, the kind of circumstances that we see, is to get invested in a target date or a years to college option and let it roll.
Yep. Yep. Get all the goodness out of that 529.
Right. That's right.
Okay. This is, it's a question, so I'm going to ask it, but it's kind of out there. Did my $2 million home purchase derail my retirement plan?
Mm. Yeah, you're good on that. You're our housing specialist.
Yeah. Right? So clearly this is a personal, situational question. But the answer sort of lies in your planning, your retirement college plan, and your budget. Okay, so it could be yes and it could be no. If you buy that $2 million house and you can still save all the money you need for retirement and save all the money you need for college and still live a comfortable life without going paycheck to paycheck as a physician, then no. And I think a lot of physicians see that $2 million price tag, and even if they have the income, they have the down payment to make it work, they feel nervous,
right,
about buying a house that they can actually afford.
Mm-hmm.
So the key there is you have to actually have a plan so that you can measure your cash flow against the plan in your life.
Right.
All right. That's the key. Now, if you just want that $2 million home, you newly minted a doctor who has no money, negative net worth with your student loans, the answer very well could be yes.
Yeah.
A big giant mortgage payment, big doctor house that just gets in the way of your future.
Well put. Yeah, well put. Yep. As I was thinking about this the other day, literally sitting on the couch thinking about home sizes, which is a geeky thing I think financial advisors do on Saturday mornings. But you know, if somebody's going to buy a larger home and then they're going to downsize later on, that home's going to appreciate, right? So they're going to have some gain in value there, which is going to be offset by property taxes and that kind of thing. So it's not really a loss. It's not like you bought some shoes and wore them out and now they're gone. But by the same token, we know that equities/stocks have outperformed homes over longer period of time. So when I say outperformed, I mean homes typically truck along at inflation plus 1%, and we've seen stocks truck along at inflation plus 6 or 7%. So really, there's an opportunity cost there. It's the money that you have versus the money that you could have had. But with that said, you know, it's not everything in life is finance. You really can have a balance between, you know, living the good life now and living the good life later. And as you said, you know, I totally agree. It's in the planning. But you know, you really need to get out the pencils and the paper and the calculators and sit down and actually, you know, put numbers on paper and see how that works out.
Yeah. Okay. Real quick too, because I think financial advisors do like talking about homes.
Okay.
We just had we had a client here in Oregon come to us with this exact problem. They wanted to upgrade home. I think it was a $3 million home. Mm-hmm. And they had the physician was 46 and has $10 million in retirement.
Yeah.
And makes about $800,000 a year.
So we're good, right?
Right. And the key was he didn't have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Without a plan, he could not buy that house and be confident. But once he had a plan and it was proven to him, oh, you'll be fine. Now he already bought the home and he's actually enjoying it rather than worrying about it.
Yeah, it gives you permission to actually enjoy the money that you have now without the fear of running out later.
Exactly. Yeah. And by the way, he is downsizing.
Nice. Good one.
Next question is, just bought a new house, got a new job. Can I wait to start saving for retirement while everything is in flux?
No.
This is a tough question.
No. No.
Yeah.
So there's two things. One is the time value of money, but the other is the tax savings.
Yes.
Those tax saving opportunities are never going to come back. So, you know, your 401k match is never coming back. Your ability to do a backdoor Roth is never coming back. The huge tax savings you get from contributing to health savings account is never coming back. And so, you know, this is not where you sit down and you eat all of one thing on your plate and you eat all of the next thing on your plate and eat all of the next thing. Personal finance is really a matter of chipping away, and you need to be eating a little bit of everything on your plate to get the benefit of all these things at the same time, because they work together.
Yeah. And not to mention, there's some careful planning you need to do when you change jobs. There's a chance that you need to max out all those things before you leave, at least at work.
Right.
So changing jobs, changing cities, states, it's difficult. And I can understand why they ask this question, because they feel like, oh my gosh, I'm strapped for cash, moving's expensive. But the reality is, you need to carefully plan that out and be able to continue to save for retirement
right.
while you're changing. Should I keep my whole life insurance? Now, I'm going to let you answer this, Ben, but this comes from someone who has had the life insurance for a long time. I think their parents bought it for them or something. And they know that whole life insurance is labeled as bad online, but they've had it for so long, they're trying to figure out if they need to do the work to let it go.
If it's something your parents bought for you, the chances are good that this is a really small policy, in which case, you know, it might feel good to keep it. It might bear higher fixed rates of return, you know, so, you know, I say there's no damage or harm in keeping that. However, you know, if you were in training and you met a really nice man who sold you some disability insurance and you wound up with some whole life when really what you wanted was a savings vehicle, you want to be smart with money, and they promised tax stuff, and what you wound up with was terrible universal life and a feeling in the pit of your stomach that you kind of done the wrong thing, that requires a second look. And many people hang on to those policies way longer than they should have, fearing, okay, well, I'm this far along, I should keep going. The economists call that the sunk cost fallacy. That is absolutely not the case. There are ways to work these things out and kind of get out of the grip of the money machine. So, yeah, different cases. But yeah, if it's small quantities, it's no big deal.
All right. Am I putting too much money in my 529? What if my kids don't go to college?
That's all you.
So
that's all you, man.
Yeah. Written about 100 of these plans. Mm-hmm. So the reality is that in today's day and age, most kids are going to go to college. But there is the chance, you know, that your child doesn't go. So I want to talk about how you can mitigate that risk. So right out of the gate, you should be saving a ton of money for college. I mean, like, your child's 3 years old. Chances are they'll probably go. You don't want to be caught with no money.
Yeah, if you're saving and it doesn't hurt, you're not saving enough.
Yeah. yeah. College is expensive.
Yeah.
But if as years go on and you're saving a ton of money for college, you start to get worried. Like, man, there's a lot of money in here.
Yeah.
You come to your annual progress check with me and I go, "Man, you already have enough to send them to public school."
Yeah.
"You're doing great." And you start to just get that pit in your stomach, like, this money is a little much, and there's a chance that I won't get to retire exactly when I want to. You know, I'd love to retire a couple years earlier. You can really look at this and you can say, I want to buy flexibility. And you buy flexibility by, rather than putting that money in your 529, you can just put it in a regular brokerage account and label it as for college.
Right.
Well, the reason I say buy is because you do lose some of the value of your 529s, the tax-free growth in your 529, they're really cheap to put money in 529s. But that's okay, because you're making a purchase of flexibility.
Right.
If your child doesn't go to college, or let's say they don't go to private school, they just go to public and you saved private school money, you can take that taxable account and just turn it over to retirement with no fees.
Right.
Okay. Now, let's say you went the other route. You wanted to squeeze all the money you could out of a 529, meaning all the tax savings you could, and your child didn't go or spent half the money. If you're not worried about retirement, you just don't want to make a bad decision with money. Mm-hmm. You get money stuck in there. You could look at this like money for grandchildren.
Right.
Okay, so it can always just be passed on to a family member, and that'll keep it out of Uncle Sam's hands. And then the one that I see more often is one of your children chooses a really expensive college, and the other might choose a less expensive college.
Right.
And that money can be transferred in between the children.
Right.
So there isn't a ton of risk if you're carefully planning for college and putting money in 529s. It really just comes down to if you're prepared and you understand the trade-offs, there are options for you to still be prepared for college, but maybe not put so much money in a 529 that takes taxes and penalties to get it out for using it for something else.
Right.
Okay. Last question. All right. I am retiring in 5 years. Should I invest my extra cash or pay off my mortgage? You want to take that one, Ben?
Yeah. I see this pretty regularly in annual progress checks. You know, we measure where our clients are versus where they need to be. And when I see that clients are ahead or if they're where they need to be, then the answer is pay off the mortgage.
Yep.
Just period. Stone cold, pay off the mortgage. Paying off the mortgage literally rewires your brain. You'll see the world in a different way. You'll wake up with a different feeling in the morning. It literally just repaints the whole scenario that you see as you look at the world through your own eyes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're on track, yeah, pay off the mortgage. If you've got a gap though, fill that gap first. Mm-hmm. It's that simple.
All right. Can I take us out?
Yeah. So that's our last question for today. Believe it or not, we still have unanswered questions. We'll be back next time with more. If you have questions, send those to podcast@physicianfamily.com. And in the meantime, remember, you're not just making a living, you're making a life.
Thank you for listening to the Physician Family Financial Advisors podcast. Are you getting all the tax breaks you really deserve? To find out, get your copy of the Overtaxed Doctor's Retirement Investing Checklist, available at physicianfamily.com/go.